Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome to episode 270 of the Last Round Podcast. And today's special guest, we have Blaine Henry, the creator of Fight Library. Thanks for joining me, Blaine.
What's up, man? How you doing, Shep?
I'm good. Well, just give everyone a little lowdown of who Blaine is and, you know, what Fight Library is and how long you've been around the sport.
Well, I started watching boxing with, you're going to hate me, but it was Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. I was an MMA guy, diehard through and through, and all my buddies like, boxing sucks, yada yada, this and that. And we watched this event because Conor McGregor's on, and lo and behold, I'm like, there's something to this, because that undercard had some good fighters. Tank was on it and all that, and that undercard had some really good fighters. I was like, you know, there's something to this. So I started, you know, investigating, like, who's good? It's Canelo. And then I found a guy from New Orleans, Regis Program. Like, that's who I'm gonna latch on to. And from then on out, it was like, you know, we're going here and here and here, and here I am today covering Jake freaking Paul, of all people.
And then Fight Libraries, like we were talking just before, it's not really breaking news. It's more down, you break down the fights, why people won.
Yeah, so my idea was, like, everybody's going to do news. ESPN had just broken into the MMA game when I'd started. I was like, nobody's going to beat ESPN in breaking news. Like, if they want to break the news, they'll break it. So I was like, yeah, let's provide something that people kind of aren't familiar with, you know, more analytical stuff. So I do videos and I do articles on that. I do weekly podcasts on boxing and MMA events. So if you're into either of those, I separate them so they're not the same, to kind of, you know, keep the audiences, give them what they want, so you can have those options there. But I like to break down that. I'm working on a Francis Ngannou video and article about how he's in the clinch with Tyson Fury and how that changed how Tyson Fury fought and where he brought that from his MMA background. And that's kind of one of the few times I get to, like, mix both of them together. So it's kind of a treat to me.
And then I was just saying to you before we started, is you have some cool posters. To me, that kind of stands out on your website.
Yeah, I like comic books, man. Comic books are fun. And all the Marvel movies, all the DC, more Star Wars for me, but they don't have, like, Star Wars comic books that are, like, different. They're all Marvel stuff. So I was like, how am I going to mix these two? And, you know, obviously Mr. Beast wants you to stand out on YouTube. And I'm like, okay, I'll stand out. Here's comic books and Ryan Garcia at the same time. Because if there's anybody right now that's a comic book character, it's got to be Ryan Garcia.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, what fighter would make a good comic book character?
Garcia, in a way, would make, like, a cyborg. Would make a cyborg. So would Usyk and Lomachenko, those real high technical guys.
Hmm. Joshua, maybe, just being that big muscle bound.
He would be like Captain Britain, where he's, like, the leader of the group and he's very, very inspirational. Tyson Fury would definitely be the bad guy.
That might be a good question for Twitter, actually. I might steal that.
Hey, you can have it.
All right, Blaine, so just jumping straight into it. The fight reviews this past Saturday the 27th of April, from the Safe Mart Center, Fresno on DAZN. Jose Ramirez moves to 29-1 with a unanimous decision over Rancis Bartholomew, 33-1. Not the best fight going into it. Me and Danny weren't too big fans of Rancis. What did you think?
I'm trying to figure out why Jose Ramirez let Rancis Bartholomew, like, hang around as long as he did, because, man, I know he was a year away from boxing, but, I mean, Bartholomew's, like, what, 36 years old? There's no reason Jose Ramirez should have had that fight going to a decision. I get the whole ring rust argument and stuff, but come on, man. And he let Bartholomew have too good of moments in that fight, too. Like, that fight had no business being as close as it looked, you know?
And it was a kind of a strange fight, because the first two rounds, Ramirez kind of took those easily. And then midway through the third, Rancis just erupted with a series of straight lefts that had Ramirez down. But then he kind of swarmed him. Ramirez was on one knee. He followed up with a few punches on the floor. I think everybody kind of thought, okay, like, well, he's going to at least count him, maybe take a point of him for hitting him whilst he was down, because he was down on one knee. But Jack Reese kind of just separated them, made sure Ramirez was okay. And then the fight kind of continued. What did you think of that?
Yeah, horrible case of reffing, honestly. You can't hit a guy while he's down. I come from a world of MMA, and as a guy who absolutely loves boxing now, within the last like 5 years, I've started watching within that, like, there's no reason whatsoever to hit a downed opponent. Bartholomew was just really like in his feelings. He was emotional in this fight, and he really was like, he was fighting emotion. You could tell because, you know, he's dropping his hands, his footwork's not the best. So he has to get in there and scrap like he normally would fight, you know, and against a guy like Jose Ramirez, who's a really technical fighter who goes to the body, which is very annoying. You got to kind of get your shots in, but like, where's the incentive for him not to cheat? Think about it. Like, he didn't lose a point. So, of course, yeah, why would I not cheat if they're not going to take a point away? Like, if you watch NFL football, American football, if you get a pass interference call, they don't give you a warning for pass interference. They penalize you 15 yards off the bat because it changes how a football game is played. Boxing the same way. I mean, he caused damage to Jose Ramirez on the ground, so he should have been docked a point. Plain and simple. I'm a huge proponent of docking points the first foul that they commit because it does change a fight.
Yeah, and Jack Reese normally, I would say, is one of the better referees that we have in California, if not the world.
Yeah, he's normally a good ref, but I mean, everybody makes their mistakes. That was just happened to be, you know, a bad one he made.
And then when I was watching it, you know, came back, watched the highlights, it also looked like the round finished 13 or 14 seconds early, according to DAZN.
I noticed that was weird. I was like, are they saving Ramirez here? Because, you know, right, Oscar's pretty much DAZN all the way. I believe they're, like, scared of Eddie Hearn and him packing up camp and going. Because Eddie Hearn can promote with anybody. It doesn't matter where he's at. But
probably more action-filled fight because of, you know, what happened in that round that we thought going up against Francis, who's normally kind of quite negative, but probably not the best showcase for Jose Ramirez, as this was in Fresno, his first fight for Golden Boy since signing for Golden Boy. Would you agree?
Yeah, it was a weird fight. I mean, he looked good at moments, and he showed moments of that old Jose Ramirez where he's like working the body, you know, that typical like Mexican style where they're in there, they're in the pocket, they're head to head, and he's ripping uppercuts to the body and hooks to the body, trying to really cripple you as you go, get your hands lower so he can come up top. And he showed signs of that, but like Bartholomew just made it like difficult for him to fight. Like he really did go in there and put on a good performance. To really, he had a better showing than he should have. And I mean, yeah, I did kind of like poo-poo on him, but he did come up and rise to the occasion against a guy like Jose Ramirez, who's, you know, Golden Boy's going to push their guys. I mean, that's fair. I get it. But Bartholomew came in there and his stock probably raised after that. And somebody else is going to see that and be like, oh, I can fight Bartholomew. Kind of like AJ did to Francis Ngannou. Like, oh, he looked good against Tyson. Watch this. Somebody can go in there and swoop in and steal that loss from Ramirez and make it look, you know, a lot better than what he did.
Now, if you were managing Jose Ramirez, where would you go from here?
I'm doing another tune-up fight, man, because that I'm not happy with that performance at all. Like, we got to make sure you got all these kinks out. Because if it is ring rust, I mean, a year off is a good while, but it's not forever in boxing. Boxers take a year off all the time, especially, you know, after they've had bad knockouts and stuff, which Ramirez really hasn't. But a year off, you know, you get some ring rust. But, yeah, we need another tune-up. Maybe at the same level as Bartholomew. I'm not going rematch with him. I mean, I don't think that brings anything to the table. Maybe put him against a southpaw or something. But, you know, I just don't see him moving up to a like a contender fight to where he's starting to make a case for a world title just yet.
Looking at the rankings, he could get back in there again against Jose Chong Zepeda. You know, it would be a rematch of that close one, but it's kind of gone away, taken a couple of losses against Pro Gray, Richardson Hitchens, and Dalton Smith most recently. But it's, like you said, Ramirez maybe needs that extra fight because of the layoff. He did look a little bit rusty in that fight, or maybe it was just Rantis's weird, awkward style.
And it was awkward.
Yeah, but the two guys kind of from California. You've got Zepeda, Ramirez, Northern California, South California. I think they could run that back, and I think that would be an interesting fight. And I think Zepeda,
Zepeda. I feel like Zepeda's washed, and that's still a quality name. Like, dude, do you remember that war he had with Baranchik?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's one of my all-time favorite fights.
During COVID, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that was, what, 7 knockdowns in like six or seven rounds. It was wild. If he can get the Josh Taylor fight, that'd be a good one for him, because Taylor's toast too, pretty much. But is he moving up? I think he's moving up, huh?
Taylor's got the rematch with Catterall that's been delayed two or three times
now.
May or June, if they manage to actually get it. But Josh kind of looks the same. He doesn't look like he's ever been the same since, beating, Jose Ramirez. And then I think he must have just partied and drank too much and never really been the same ever since.
Yeah, for Ramirez, I'm kind of looking for fighters that are on the decline, to be honest with you. Somebody who has a name, like, keep him away from, like, Jermaine Ortiz. That's a bad fight for him. That's a terrible fight because Jermaine Ortiz has looked great. Sandor Martin's another one I'd be like, because Sandor's always fought above the competition, giving people a hard time. I'm not saying he wouldn't beat, like, Martin, but that kind of fight's like the recipe for disaster. Like, oh, no, if Martin has a good night, it really could. If Ramirez shows up like he did, like, that could be a very bad fight for him, just a bad look. Again, he might win it, he might lose it, but regardless, it's a bad look.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, a very interesting one for where does Jose Ramirez go from here? The next fight on that card was Virgil Ortiz Jr. moved to 21-0 with 21 knockouts against Thomas Delorme, who dropped to 26-7-1. A quick night. I don't really know how we're going to review it. It was kind of like over before it started.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, though. I mean, that's his second first-round finish in a row, Frederick Lawson was the last one, but we know what was going on here. He has the big fight with Tim Zhu, and let's get in, let's get out, and let's make sure we don't have any injuries going in. And I mean, how much quicker in and out can you get than a first round knockout? I feel he just trying to get out of there as soon as he could after they booked the Zhu fight. Let's not have any hiccups or anything like that.
Yeah, I do like the fact that he's gone back to, Robert Garcia as well. I think that's just a good matchup. I think that the kind of Robert Garcia style, that gym, the amount of young, hungry animals coming out of there, I think he just gets such good sparring. And I know, obviously, at times, I think some fighters don't like it because the gym is kind of big that they probably have to share their time with coach. But I think he made the right move in going back. And like you said, two first round knockouts, since he's gone back there. So I think he's been proven right.
Yeah, they got to be doing something right in that camp because, man, that Tim Zhu fight, dude, that has me, excited. That's a real fun fight. And, I mean, the Zhu lost to Fundora. I get it. No, I mean, that elbow was kind of, bad and he bleeding all over the place. But, I mean, I think Tim Zhu can beat Fundora if he doesn't eat an elbow like he's fighting an MMA fight or anything like that. I think he can beat Fundora. So I don't feel like Tim Zhu's stock fell out after that performance. So that and Virgil Ortiz, that's just a fun fight, bro. That's just one of those ones that just, if I'm trying to tell people about boxing, I'm like, look, Usyk and Fury, it's a big fight, but it's probably going to be boring. But if you go watch Tim Zhu and Virgil Ortiz, that'll get you a good idea of what real boxing's like, because that's what it's about.
Yeah, that's a interesting card. The Saturday, August the 3rd, for people listening, that's going to be in Los Angeles. It's going to be the first Saudi card done by Turki Ali Sheikh over in Los Angeles, I believe. And it's just a stacked card from top to bottom. Interesting fight altogether. You've got to respect it to Virgil Ortiz and Tim Zhu that they both took it, because so many people try to maneuver and pick the easiest path they can to the top, where they've just been like, fuck it, send it. Let's just do it. Especially like Tim Zhu, like you say, bad cut, lost his world title. And then he's just like, let's do it. Virgil Ortiz, like we just touched on, 21-0, 21 knockouts, a lot of them early. But Tim Zhu's like, no, I'm in here to, fight the best, earn some money and then, get out. So yeah, all respect to both of them for that.
He's here for a good time, not a long time. That card in Los Angeles is stacked, bro. I think I'm most excited for Isaac Cruz, though. He's just a tank. And I really, I've been campaigning for this on every, boxing I've talked about. I want Isaac Cruz and Subaru Matias to fight, just because if you put a piece of coal between those two guys, it'll be a diamond by the end of the fight, just the amount of pressure both of those bring. So I'm excited for Isaac Cruz to come back after he sacrificed Rolly Romero for us.
It's funny how some people Isaac Cruz, he sells even to the people that don't speak, because he doesn't speak English, I don't think. Us fans, we still love him. Even though we can't really relate to him, I think it's just his style, the way that he just gives everything in there. And his nickname is just perfect. Pitbull.
He reminds me of Mike Tyson, how he fights. He's got this giant neck that he doesn't even have a neck. It's just literally his head sitting on his shoulders. And he's coming forward at all costs, and he's banging. He's throwing in hooks wild, hard, and fast. And they just put people down, and they hurt really, really bad. And he just brings this fun fight style. Like he's the epitome of a boxer.
You do wonder with how PBC kind of maneuver their fighters. Are they trying to maneuver him back to Tank Davis eventually at the end of the year or maybe next year, especially with that Amazon Prime deal? I don't think Amazon are too sold on the first few cards, because to us boxing nerds, the fights are good, but to the casual fan, a lot of the fights didn't have that name recognition that you would tune in for.
Yeah, Amazon's looking for things to fill up their plate too, but if they can get a pay-per-view sale in the meantime, and Isak Cruz versus Gervonta Davis 2 does that. That's a fantastic fight. The first one was great, and Cruz looks bigger now, and you know, Tank's better. He's a better boxer too, and you know, that's just one of those ones that was like, man, I want it again, because it was a little bit tepid of a decision.
It's always crazy, our fan, when we do this podcast, how we went from Virgil Ortiz to Isak Cruz, who doesn't fight until August. You know, you just you get down a rabbit hole, and then just off you go.
Dude, we got so much food to eat this next few months, man, with all these good fights coming up. So it's like, I'm so excited to talk boxing with somebody because it's just fun, man. Like, this sport is, you got your favorite fighters, and they might not be the best, but they're still your favorite fighters.
I do worry that if, you know, Turki Ali Sheikh eventually decides, like, you know what, this boxing gig isn't working, that we will become so accustomed to these great cards, then obviously, you know, Eddie Hearn, Frank Warren, and those guys, they can't afford to put on the type of cards that he does. So hopefully we don't get so many and then he disappears, you know, and goes to do like wrestling or, you know, something other. He take NFL or something like that. He, you know, he goes down another project.
I hope he actually loves it like he says he does, because this guy's been a savior to boxing. I get, you know, his whole history with what he's done on his rise to ascendancy, but the guy knows what a good boxing match is. And when he's putting together fights like this, Benavidez fighting the winner of Bivol and Bitterbiev, and you got this mega card in Los Angeles, and then he's the one that's like, hey, I got the money. Let's go ahead and put it up. Tyson Fury and Usyk, let's finally get this heavyweight unified. Like, he's a real boxing fan, I feel like. When he talks about it, he knows what he's talking about. So, like, he has his standards, too. It's funny. So, like, the UFC tried to put on an event there, and it was a very lackluster event. A lot of the fights there were just – they were okay fights, but he was like, nah, this isn't good enough. Come back with another card. So they had to move the whole event from Saudi Arabia over to, like, Las Vegas on, like, a month's notice or something like that, because he's like, no, I'm not doing this. So you know who really has the power when it comes to this promotion stuff when it's in boxing with these Saudis. It's Al-Hashish himself, because he's the guy that knows what he wants, and he's getting what he wants.
Yeah, money talks.
Yeah, just so happens I like the same things he does.
So the last one on the Golden Boy card, we have Oscar Duarte moved to 27-2-1 with a ninth round knockout over of Joseph Diaz, who dropped to 33-6-1. A strange fight for about four rounds. Joseph Diaz looked, you know, really good, and then he just kind of like looked like he just ran out of gas, ran out of ideas, you know, didn't necessarily know how to break, you know, Oscar Duarte down, who looked humongous compared to Joseph Diaz. He looked several weight divisions higher.
Isn't Joseph Diaz coming up in weight? Like, he's not natural that weight class, right?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, what was he, like 130, if I'm not mistaken, or something like that?
Yeah, when he first died, I think he was all the way down at, like, I think 128. Ooh, and then he moved up to, like, 130. And, you know, I think just over time, you know, just not having maybe the training camps he did. Because you know what that's like. It's the same as MMA. You kind of boil yourself down for the weigh-in and then refeed back up. Yeah. And I think, you know, he just didn't want to do that, because in some of his past, you know, recent fights, he's looked a little bit fleshy.
Yeah, I do. I have noticed, because, like, I really do like Jojo Diaz. He's a fun fighter, and I've always, you know, I knew he wasn't going to be a real champion, but I felt like he was the one that could, like, go in there and test these guys that could be champion, you know, like the Keyshawn Davises and stuff like that. But in his last few fights, man, he's looked bad. He's looked rough. You know, I don't know if it's because he's fighting bigger guys, or what, but he hasn't had a quality win in some time. Didn't he get beat up by William Zepeda, wasn't that him that beat him up too?
So I was just looking at it. So he's lost five of his last six. So going back to 2021, he lost to Devin Haney, and then William Zepeda, like you just said, and then Macito Hester. He then beat Jerry Perez over 10 rounds in 2023. And then this year, he lost to Jesus Antonio Perez by split decision, and then this fight against Oscar Duarte.
Yeah, I mean, he's been through the ringer. Don't forget the Gary Russell fight, too.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like you said, I think ever since he decided to move up, and maybe it's for the bigger names or, you know, just making weight was getting too hard, obviously, with age. But he didn't. The thing is, he didn't have the power lower down the divisions to keep people off. And I think that may have been why, after a while, Oscar Duarte got, like, you know, three or four rounds in and was like, you know what, this guy just can't back me up. And then he had no, you know, he wasn't scared to come in, close him down, just walk him down and get him out of there, which is essentially what happened in the ninth round.
Yeah, don't forget, like, Oscar Duarte, he didn't look terrible against Ryan Garcia. No. And we know Ryan Garcia is on top of the world right now. As a matter of fact, Ryan Garcia, actually, I felt like he looked bad against Oscar Duarte. And I, you know, I didn't give Duarte his roses then, but after this win, I mean, to be fair, like I said, I don't feel like Jojo Diaz is what he was 4 years ago. Like you said, a 1-5 run, that might be it for him, you know, but I don't feel like I gave Duarte enough of his roses there. Cause he fought well. Garcia started with the whole shoulder roll in that fight. So when you've never seen Garcia do that on tape and you're not drilling, you know, right hand or left hook, it's kind of hard to deal with. And, you know, he dealt with it well. He got knocked down via a body shot, if I'm not mistaken. And that's what really kind of put him away. But, man, that win, that Jojo Diaz win, that's gonna carry him a long way just by Diaz's name itself.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't think Oscar Duarte looked that bad against Ryan Garcia. And, you know, I've said a few times on the show, and some people agree, some people don't. Ryan Garcia just reminds me of, like, a, you know, a lightweight or a welterweight now version of Deontay Wilder. He can be 5, 6, 7, 8 rounds down, but he has that much confidence, you know, in that left hook that eventually he's going to get you. And that's essentially, I think, what he did against Oscar Duarte. And in the Devin Haney fight and the Duarte fight, he did that weird thing where some rounds he would literally just skip round the outside of the ring like he was literally running away. And I don't know whether that's to kind of draw you in or to get you tired and stuff like that, knowing that eventually, like, hey, you're going to get tired. Your defense is going to slip a little, and this left hook is going to land on the chin or anywhere on the head. Because when he fought Duarte, if I remember correctly, I think he hit him on the top of the head, and that still like discombobulated him.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That was it. I was thinking it was a body shot. Yeah, I don't know. Like Garcia, he looked good against Duarte, and that might have been a fight where Duarte's like, he levels up. You know, I'm often speak about how some fighters, when they take a loss, it's not always like, oh, I'm done here now. They get better from taking these losses, you know. We see it all the time to where I take a loss. Oh, I'm not the best in the world. I thought I was the best, but I'm not. This guy just handed it to me, and they explode from there. You know, they get great from there. That might have been the case with Oscar Duarte to where he gets better. I like Oscar Duarte versus Keyshawn Davis next, actually. I think that's the fight to make after this. Duarte just got him a good win over Jojo Diaz. Let's see how good Keyshawn is. Let's see if he's ready for that top of the division.
It's going to be an interesting one where they both go from here. I know, is Golden Boy going to give Duarte another chance, bring him back on and stuff like that? Because I don't think he's officially signed with Golden Boy again. And then I think Diaz was looking for offers for other people because I think just before this, his contract ran out. Didn't field any offers, and I think he's re-signed again with Golden Boy. But like you kind of said, is the thing is with Diaz, even though he's been on that bad run, I think as fans, we all still love him because he takes those fights. And yeah. I think he's worked out more like MMA, where it's, you know, if I'm in big fights, I'm going to get a big purse. Whereas if I take these easy fights with a lower purse, you know, and I'm, you know, I might win, but these bigger fights, you know, they're going to get me more money and more legacy. And, you know, if I just don't turn them down. Because if you look at, like, for example, Nate Diaz, Masvidal, you know, they're not the best fighters in the UFC, but the fans love them because they don't turn down a fight.
Exactly. And that's what people want to see. Like, people were tired of the early 2000s boxing where it's like, yeah, we might fight one day. We might fight. And, like, recently we're seeing, like, the fights are getting made, you know, and these fighters are getting paid for it. Like, I do feel like Tank and Garcia started that, really, because you had Tank and Garcia and then you had Crawford and Spence at the same time. But I'm not going to give Crawford and Spence the credit because that fight was in the works for 5 years, you know. We had the accident and then Crawford, you know, kind of taking his time. I felt like that it was going to happen eventually. It just so happened. But I think Tank and Garcia showed that there's money to be made when the big fights are made and the fans know what the big fight is. We don't need to know 4 years of buildup before a fight happens. We know who the best people are. We can tell.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think, like we're going to touch on in this episode, over the next few weeks, we have so many undisputed fights, which is just amazing, you know. And some of them are thanks to, you know, Saudi Arabia and stuff like that. So hopefully, you know, people are actually coming together, you know, and fighting more instead of taking the easier path, avoiding each other and stuff like that, and having to become mandatories and then skipping those and, you know, dropping the belts to avoid certain people. So, yeah, we think we have been, you know, blessed recently.
I do think the further we get away from Floyd Mayweather, like his era of 50-0, the more that'll be the case too. The whole 50-0 undefeated, the best ever, was Floyd Mayweather's thing. But like, you know, yeah, it was, but nobody takes it as serious as Floyd wants him to, honestly. He's one of the best ever, but that 50-0 record, I mean, he picked a lot of it.
I'm hoping that with the rise of the UFC becoming so popular, that, like you said, I hope that more people look at it like that. That, like, okay, well, you know, Conor McGregor lost, you know, Masvidal lost, Nate Diaz lost, you know, this boxer's lost, you know, what difference does that make?
Yeah. Yeah, like when people look in the UFC, when they look at like Justin Gaethje, they see, oh man, he lost to Poirier. Oh man, he lost to Eddie Alvarez. You know, he lost to Max Holloway. But holy crap, those were some good fights. And I mean, if you look, think back to like Duran and Sugar Ray and Tommy Hearns and my dude Marvin Hagler, they all lost. Duran lost. He only won one fight against all of those guys, you know. But people still look back at Roberto Duran. I still tout him as the best ever. You know, I think him or Julio Cesar Chavez are the two best boxers of all time. And I don't care if Chavez lost or if Duran lost. He beat Sugar Ray. He dethroned Sugar Ray Leonard. So, like, yeah, I love it. I like it. He was in great fights. And you win some, you lose some. There's no such thing as undefeated. Undefeated is a myth.
Going on to a great boxer himself. What a way to transition into the next fight. So, you know, fight preview Saturday, the 4th of May from the T-Mobile Arena, Las Vegas on Amazon Prime pay-per-view. Canelo, 62-2, goes up against Jaime Munguia, who's 43-0. And this is for the undisputed super middleweight titles of the year of the world. So what was your first thoughts when this fight was made? Because I think most people were hoping that we were going to get David Benavidez.
So after Benavidez fought, I did a podcast episode and I talked about how, yeah, Benavidez looked good, but he's not going to beat Canelo. And then after watching Jaime Munguia fight, I was like, oh, that's the one that Canelo's going to fight. That's the one that Canelo's going to fight. Of course, you know, Benavidez beat Demetrius Andrade, but I don't rate that as high of a win as the John Ryder win when you're trying to get into the Canelo sweepstakes, because, like, who's Andrade? You know, like, Canelo has no history with Demetrius Andrade except for telling him, like, who are you? Get out of here, in that press conference that while ago. But when Jaime Munguia went and fought John Ryder and walked him down and beat the daylights out of him, Canelo, the whole marketing is like, oh, you think you're better than me because you beat John Ryder? No, I'm going to fight you and we're going to see who's actually the better guy. It was a perfect move on Munguia's team's part, booking that John Ryder fight. It was a perfect move because they knew the Andrade fight from Benavidez didn't move the needle for Canelo. They know that. You got to know, like, Canelo's picking fights. He's going to pick the fights that he wants. And he doesn't pick hard. I mean, he doesn't pick layover fights. You know, he's picking some of the best in division. Benavidez is the only one you can say he kind of didn't fight, you know. But Benavidez didn't bring anything to the table. And by the time he did, Munguia, like, swooped in and did the thing. You know, he swooped in against Ryder and was like, hey, look, I did this better than you. And that got Canelo excited. And that's why he got the fight. That's why it was booked.
Danny and I have always said that we feel that you know, either the PBC or, you know, Team Benavidez themselves have missed a trick by always having him fight in, well, not always, but fight a lot in Arizona, where why not fight in Los Angeles? You've got, you know, the Mexican-Americans and, you know, the Mexican fans. It's only not that far from the border if they want to come over and watch him fight. Because obviously, you know, I think Canelo himself has said it in recent interviews, is like, well, what does he bring to the table? And if he'd fought in Los Angeles, if he'd fought in, you know, Las Vegas, I think Benavidez, especially with his style, I think he would have a bigger pool of fans.
Yeah, and he's got a great style. You know, I'm not going to say he's amazing, but he knocks people out and he puts on pace. So it's like, yeah, everybody should like this guy. He's fun. He's a blast. But for some reason, you're right. Nobody wants to watch him fight. I don't quite get it.
Do you think we're starting to see a small decline in Canelo?
I think we're seeing Canelo simplify his game. It's hard to say that he's taking easy fights because he's not. He's undisputed. He fought all the hard people in the division. You know, he fought everybody with a belt. He went and got all the belts at super middleweight. He beat Triple G two times. Yeah. He beat Triple G. He's not scared to fight anybody. He fought Bivol. He fought Kovalev. I mean, I know it was a ghost of Kovalev, but yeah, I think we're seeing. So I got this theory like that Canelo, because I do my animations on for my articles where I like animate certain techniques to demonstrate them, and I was looking for a lead left hook to the body. Who better to animate than Canelo throwing that beautiful lead left that he throws? I ended up settling on one from the Charlo fight. But I was like, let me go see if I can find one from the Triple G fight. If you go back and watch that second Triple G fight, that's a completely different Canelo Alvarez. He's a lot more dynamic in his striking. His head moves a lot more. He doesn't keep the high guard as much. He's more prone to exchange in the pocket. Whereas the Canelo we've seen now, he's more, I don't want to say one-dimensional, but he knows what tools he likes. He likes that lead hook. He likes to punch your arms. And he's not going to throw as many uppercuts as he did or overhand rights. He'll throw the overhand right a decent amount. But he's really simplified his game. And we're not getting those wild moments like we saw with Danny Jacobs where he's, you know, bobbing and weaving and moving his head and stuff like that because he has no interest in doing that anymore. I don't know. I don't think it was the Bivol loss because he was fighting like this before that. But I feel like he's just kind of taking his game to a different area to where it's simpler and there's fewer mistakes. Because if he can make fewer mistakes, there's fewer people that can beat him.
Do you think it's more he simplified it over Father Time's catching up with him?
Father Time is catching up, but I think it's more simplification of his game. So it's like, go back and watch him fight Triple G, even any one of the first two fights. Third one, not so much. Actually, no, go watch Triple G 2 and 3. And you'll see a starkly different Canelo. Everybody remembers Triple G looked bad and old in that third fight. But you also, like, you don't see a Canelo that's going in there and banging it out with somebody. He doesn't rely on his chin as much. I feel like he's not okay with taking a shot to land a shot because he knows he's the harder hitter. First of all, he's fighting up in weight at 168. But second of all, he knows, yeah, Father Time is there. Father Time is there and he's coming.
So people who don't know, Canelo's 33, I believe, and has been boxing for more than half of his life because he turned pro at, I think I'm correct in saying, 15.
Yeah, something like that. It's wild. He's one of my favorite fighters, too. I love watching him fight, so I'm hyped for this weekend.
So looking at Jaime Munguia, do you think we've seen much of a change since he moved to Freddie Roach?
Yeah, I mean, he changed in how he fights and stuff, but I don't know if it matters. I did say in that podcast episode where I was like, you know, Munguia, he looks good, and this is the guy who Canelo's probably going to fight next because of the Ryder fight. But I don't know if he has what it takes to beat Canelo. And, I mean, Canelo's not going to succumb to body shots, you know. Canelo, we know his weakness. His weakness is a giant or a southpaw. And that's partially why he looked bad against John Ryder, quote-unquote bad. There was no case where he was losing that fight. But it's a southpaw or somebody huge. You know, and we see that, you know, Munguia, he's good, but I don't think Roach can get him ready in time to face somebody like Canelo, who's just a head and toes above the rest of the competition.
Just building off something you said there. So do you think David Benavidez would be kryptonite to Canelo just due to the size difference?
No, because when I look at like Bivol, who beat him, Bivol boxed correctly, and Canelo capitalizes off of mistakes. And let's be honest, David Benavidez doesn't box right. And if you hit him in the body, especially after that weight cut that he makes to 168, he will eventually topple Benavidez. I do think Benavidez has the option to put it on Canelo early, who is sometimes of a slow starter. And if he can get ahead on some rounds and work the body on Canelo, he can start banking rounds away. He could steal that fight. But I don't think he knocks out Canelo. I don't think anybody outside of Bitter Biev knocks out Canelo. Because he's not going higher than that. Like the cruiserweight stuff, that's a joke. But I don't think Benavidez could. I think the volume could really cause Canelo some problems. But I think once Canelo realizes, oh, the volume's coming, my punches to the arms to get your arms tired, my shots to the body, you're going to fall. And by round six, Benavidez, who looked tired against Andrade, if you remember, he let Andrade back into that fight because Demetrius Andrade hit the body. So I think Canelo kind of takes over that fight. I actually think Jaime Munguia is a better fighter for Canelo himself because styles make fights. I do think Jaime Munguia would give a tougher fight to Canelo.
So if you were Freddie Roach, how would you tell Jaime Munguia to fight Canelo with being that you're Mr. Breakdown Fights?
That's a tough, tough one. Like Canelo doesn't show any weakness. When we look, we got to look at what kind of fighter Munguia is, and I want to look at what has beat Canelo in the past, okay? You got Floyd Mayweather, who Jaime Munguia is not, and you got Dimitri Bivol, okay? So I'm not sure the size of this fight, actually. What is the reach for these two guys? Do you know off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, no, but I would say...
Munguia's coming up, too.
He would probably have a substantial reach advantage, I would guess.
He's got a 70-inch reach, and Munguia's not listed. Dang. Oh, I don't know. So, yeah, Canelo likes to counter off that high guard, and he likes to punch your arms. I'm going to make it a boring fight, and it's going to suck, and fans are going to boo, and I'm not going to be, you know, a famous fighter for this. I'm going to give Canelo very little to work with. I'm going to jab, I'm going to cross, and I'm going to move. And he's not going to be able to settle in. I don't want my arms hit because I need to be fresh for 12 rounds, and I don't want my body hit because I need to be fresh for 12 rounds. So I it's tough for Munguia. Like I'm looking at my notes against John Ryder here. He did a lot of pressure. You know, he brought a lot of pressure to John Ryder. 1-1-2 to the body he threw. He did a lot of good stuff working to the body. So I do like that against Canelo. One day he's going to get old and tired. So, you know, those shots to the body wouldn't be a bad investment, especially if he starts to land to your body. You want to keep the gas tank disparity within your range. But man, it really is a tough ask. And you have to make it a boring fight. You don't want to get into the clinch with him because he's going to hurt you in the clinch. You're going to have to stick on to the outside. And you know what? Get ballsy. Switch to southpaw for a little while. Switch to southpaw just to throw him off because we know Canelo don't like southpaws. So I'd be drilling southpaw this whole time, even though Munguia is not really a switch hitter. I'm going to do it anyway just to kind of make Canelo question for a second. And I'm not coming out southpaw. I'm going to come out orthodox, and I'm going to strike fast and hard and go at Canelo early, bank three rounds. Then I'm going to switch to southpaw, see if I can bank another two rounds off of that. And then hopefully I can box my way to another 2.5-3 rounds to win the decision.
And then after this fight, do you think we will see Canelo Benavidez in September?
No, because Benavidez is going to get a shot at Undisputed. He's going to fight Bivol and Bitter Biev at that weight class. And if that can happen, then you book Canelo versus Benavidez at light heavyweight, and that's a mega fight, Undisputed versus Undisputed again. If Benavidez wants something to get Canelo's attention, it's another Undisputed versus Undisputed matchup, this time one that Canelo can win titles at.
So I
think Charlo's the next. I think Charlo Jamal's the next fighter, which sucks.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. I saw that on Twitter today that came out. That was so, because he's kind of running out of opponents. You know, really, I saw today that they actually dropped the ticket prices for like $200. They'd gone from like $600 to $400 in some sections. Ooh. Just because I think now we don't have those stellar names that bring everybody out, I think, to watch Canelo. And like, and then also, like you said, maybe the change in style. Before, he was kind of more action, you know, bobbing and weaving and stuff like that. Whereas now he kind of is very slower. Like everything that he throws has kind of like a meaning and some substance behind it. Whereas below, he before maybe he kind of like wasted a bit too much energy with constantly moving.
Yeah, and I think he needs a nemesis. And Benavidez is obviously that nemesis. Canelo's just kind of in his I'm chilling arc right now. But you might want to look at a class below at like Zhanabek Alhamdulillah, the Kazakh guy. That's a decent story to it. He's got two belts. He's a southpaw, but like nobody knows Zhanabek.
Right.
You know, but he can bring him a good fight. Like I've interviewed Zhanabek before twice, and he's stated both times, I want to avenge Triple G. I want to avenge Triple G, but first I need to be undisputed. He kind of knows like he has to bring something to the table. So I don't know. Like Canelo, I think you're right. He really does like, he can't risk going up and fighting Bivol or Beterbiev again because that's just too big for him. He's finally Icarus flown too close to the sun. His wings are melted and he's fallen to earth again. And you know, with Bivol, who's not the biggest hitter. So there really is nothing more for Canelo to do. He's really just legacy packing on it. And he can future proof his legacy by beating Morel, Benavidez, Zhanabek, and Munguia this weekend. You know, that those are guys that'll be champion for a good while after Canelo's done with them, like Floyd did with Canelo.
You think we could see him go over, you know, like you said, it's kind of all legacy now, go over maybe to the UK and fight someone like a Chris Eubank Jr. just to say like, hey, I fought at Wembley Stadium, the UK, because essentially they're supposed to be world champions, right? They're supposed to kind of travel.
Yeah. I'm trying to pull up the rankings for that right now. That would sell a lot of tickets and make Canelo a lot of money. Sure, but like I'm looking like Eubank, Sergey Derevchenko is always a fun fight, and he's always tough for anybody he fights despite his record, but that doesn't move the needle. Mm-hmm. He can't even go over to Ukraine, obviously. Fighting the United States does nothing for him. You know, there's the Cuban fighters, Mexico versus Cuba, you can argue. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know what's next for Canelo because like there is nothing, you know, what do you give the man that has the entire world in his hands?
So if we're plotting it, we're probably thinking Munguia, Charlo in September, and then hopefully fingers crossed, you're looking at what, Benavidez in May?
Yeah, I think Cinco de Mayo, Benavidez in Guadalajara, Mexico. Canelo's going to take him up to altitude and really teach him a lesson. So Mexico City, not Guadalajara, Mexico City, even better.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you when you're that big a name, it's, you know, what gets us tingling, you know, like what do we want to see? And there isn't many fights left. Like after, like, I mean, I don't care about the Charlo fight, the Benavidez fight. Then after that, he's kind of completed the game.
yeah. Like he's in like super mode, like on Super Punch Out, where you just go back through it and everybody's easier now, you know?
Right. Yeah.
He can fight Mike Tyson.
Jake Paul's what, fighting, used to fight at like 175, 190 or something like that. So
yeah,
that would be crazy to see him, you know, just turn over and start fighting those type of people. Just to,
wild. Wow.
The big purses, I guess. Who would you say is the next person coming behind? Obviously we had Oscar De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather even took over those kind of Mexican holidays for a period of time. Now we've got Canelo. And then who, or are we going to lose those dates to the UFC?
Those dates will go to the UFC for after Canelo, I think. I don't think there's a – maybe Ryan Garcia, actually.
Yeah.
Garcia could take it. Tank, maybe. I'm trying to think, like, who's the big names? In a way, he has no Mexican independence bone in his body, being a Japanese fighter. Bam, maybe, you know, Bam's a fun fighter, but he's little and fans don't care about little people.
That's a good shout, actually. Ryan Garcia or Jesse Bam Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are probably the two next prospects coming through. The problem you have with Bam is doesn't really talk, right? Doesn't really sell. He kind of does everything in the ring the correct way by taking people out and being, you know,
murdering. Murdering people. Let's see, who's all on the champions? Emmanuel Navarrete is a fun fighter, but I don't think he'll be the guy, you know. It's a lot of Americans now, man. It's crazy.
I think you were right in what you said the first time. I think we'll, after Canelo, I think we're going to lose them too, sadly, to the UFC.
For now. Mexicans love their boxing, and they'll find somebody else to come up, you know. But for now, UFC, they got their whole UFC Noche they do now. And, I mean, they've not done a good UFC Noche yet. It's going to be two women's fight back-to-back. And, you know, it's just not fun. But they own the holiday, you know. They might do it at the Spear.
Sorry, I was just shutting the door.
You good, you good.
So moving on, the next one on that card, Brandon Figueroa, 24-1-1 up against Jesse Magdaleno for the WBC interim featherweight title. A fight between two former 122 title holders now competing at 126, each returning after a year-long layoff. Not a bad fight. I'm not too sure how Jesse Magdaleno managed to, you know, weasel his way into a WBC interim featherweight fight, even though he hasn't fought for a long time, had some recent losses, but I think the WBC just wanted their 3%, so they threw a belt at this fight so they could get some sanctioning fees.
Yeah, I mean, they're setting Canelo's guys up, you know. I think Figueroa is Canelo's guy, if I'm not mistaken. They're setting him up, and I think he gets the win. I think he kind of walks through Jesse on this one. Jesse's going to get his payday, you know, and much deserved, but I just don't see it happening.
No, I'm saying I think Figueroa's going to be throw too much, too quick, or anything like that for Jesse Magdaleno, who's just kind of been in the wilderness for a long time. I think he just didn't, when he was at his prime, didn't really take the sport seriously. And then obviously he kind of had that decline. I think now he's kind of getting a little bit more switched on, realizing this is his last chance and, you know, come back up. But I think, you know, Brandon Figueroa is just going to be throw too much, too powerful. And I think Figueroa will probably take it either late stoppage or a points win.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't see how he gets it done.
Moving on to the card, Mario Barrios, 28-2 up against Fabian Andres Medina, who's 22-2 for the WBC interim welterweight. Another interim title on this card. WBC are getting paid.
Yeah, they're trying to get their pennies up. Barrios, I'm taking Barrios. I mean, this is going to be a very left side of the box rec page card. We're showcasing Canelo versus Munguia. And they don't want anybody to outshine that. So I don't see, you know, Stallonis is going to win all the way down the left side. I really think that's like going to be the case this night. And Barrios is, I like Barrios. He's fun, you know, but this fight just kind of, it'll be cool to see him back, but it kind of doesn't do anything for me.
No, yeah, the same. He's a big, strong, powerful guy. Should be a good fight up against Marcos Maidana's younger brother, which is probably Fabian Maidana's claim to fame, I guess. No more than his boxing career himself, unfortunately.
Sadly.
Moving on to a big fight I know that you're interested in. Monday, the 6th of May, Tokyo Dome, Tokyo, Japan, on ESPN+. Now, Naoya Inoue, 26-0, goes up against Lewis Neary, who's 35-1. This is for all the belts at the super bantamweight. So, starting off, will Neary make weight?
Probably. I think he will. When Naoya Inoue calls you to come to Japan, I don't care who you are, do not go. Do not do it. He's going to hurt you. And that's what he's doing to Lewis Neary. Just like think about what kind of pull Naoya Inoue has in Japan right now. Neary was banned from fighting in Japan. I think from performance enhancing drugs, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember right, or something.
Yeah, I think it was a combination of performance-enhanced drugs and also not making weight several times. So I think the Japanese commission was like, you know what, dude? Like, you're banned, and just banned.
No, thank you. And Inoue said, no. I'll take him. Give me him. This is going to be a showcase for Naoya Inoue, who is one of my favorite boxers right now. I just love Naoya Inoue. Like, he is just when they were doing the whole pound-for-pound and thing last year after Inoue went undisputed twice in a year and Crawford won the undisputed with Spence, I was like, you know, Crawford's got to be your pound for pound, but your fighter of the year is going to be Inoue, because what he did against Fulton and down the weight class below that, like, man, he is just special. He's a generational talent that we've not seen before, and I think there's a day we see him move up another weight class and go undisputed there.
Have you analyzed him? What is it that he does so good?
He doesn't get out of position. He's still learning. So I did a piece on him comparing the two Nonito Donaire fights. And if you remember that first fight, Nonito Donaire, he kind of turned back the clock. He looked good. He hurt Inoue for a second. But Inoue, really good left hook. But his right hand's also very good. His footwork, he's always in his power base, ready to punch. He's not going to bounce all over the place like Lomachenko or anything like that, but he does create angles. And if you look at the second Nonito Donaire fight, where he just ran through him, yeah, Donaire was older, but like Inoue was just a step above, and he got better even on the Fulton fight. Like, he knows how to get his power punches. He knows how to draw strikes out where he can open up lanes against like Fulton, that right over the top. I mean, he created that. He created that going to the body and all his body work, getting Fulton to overcommit. And Fulton's a fairly disciplined fighter. So for him to be able to do that against Stephen Fulton was fantastic. And I think that's what really makes him special, is that he's got a strict adherence to what he wants to do as a fighter. He wants to land his shots. He wants to be defensively sound. And he does all of it. And he drills it every single day. And you can tell he drills it every day.
Would calling him a simple fighter be kind of harsh?
I don't know if he's simple, but I can see where you're going with that. Yeah, he is primarily two, three weapons: a jab, a left hook, and a right cross. He'll come over the top with the right. He'll throw that left hook up top and down low. But he takes these simple things now, and he's complicated with them. So like, he'll change levels with his jab. He'll jab to the body, jab up top. So when he goes down to throw this left hook, he can pop up, or he goes down to throw a jab to the body, and he'll pop up like Joe Frazier does when Joe Frazier pops up with his left hook. Or he'll throw left hooks up top, and your guard's super high, and he's landing this crucial body shot that just cripples you. He's great. He really is. Like, the way he mixes up his shots, it's just fantastic.
With all of the skills that he has, how high in weight do you think he can move before he's fighting two bigger giants, essentially?
Like Canelo. Let's see. Let me pull up the old BoxRec champions list, because I want to see, because it's not only like how good he is and how big his opponents are, but it's also how good, because like, there are weak divisions. Like, 130 is not good as 135, which is, you know, that's why Lomachenko is at 135 and not 130. So let's see. Let's go down. Inoue, champion at one, at super bantamweight. Oh, Lee Wood. I would love that fight. Ray Vargas. Yeah, I can see him at featherweight. Do you think he can beat Oshaki Foster?
Yeah,
I think so.
I think he'd give Lee Wood a good fight as well, like you said.
I know. That's a good fight. And Lee Wood always comes to the occasion. I love Lee Wood. He's such a fun fighter. Ever since that like Conlon win, it's just been great. And then like the Warrington win and all that. Yeah.
So what about Super Feather?
Yeah, I think he can win titles at Super Feather. Emmanuel Navarrete is at Super Feather. He'll probably go up to 135 soon, because he's been chasing Shakur for forever for God knows whatever reason. Oscar Valdez, that'd be a fun fight for him too. Yeah, I think he can go up to Super Feather. I think he got a couple more weight classes in him.
I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, like, let him get saucy.
On Twitter, I can't remember who said it, but there was that debate several weeks ago where I can't remember what it was exactly, like, that he needs to leave Japan. He needs to fight in America, essentially. I'm sure you probably saw it because there was a lot of people debating it. What's your thoughts on, you know, if Inoue wants to cross over, make money, get to this bigger audience, he needs to fight more in America?
I don't believe that whatsoever, because Americans are already talking about him. I mean, his body of work speaks for itself. And the trail of bodies left in his wake, the two weight classes in a year's time, how do you argue with that? You know, he's amazing. He's amazing, and amazing fighters get discovered. Like, that, you can't hide them. Yeah, sure, you can make them mega stars. And would he be bigger if he fought in America more? Sure. I mean, he'd have some mega paydays in Las Vegas, you know, but why? Why would he travel overseas when he's the A side? He's the Japanese fighter, and he loves his Japanese fans. Like, I wouldn't leave.
Where would he be on your pound for pound list?
Right now, number one. Number one. Unless Usyk beats Fury, he's number one.
Give me your top three.
Ooh, okay, so Inoue, Crawford, I'd put next. I don't rate Crawford as high as everybody else does. I don't think the Spence one was as good as everybody says it is. I mean, I give him credits because he's beat. Errol Spence has been undisputed in two weight classes, but I just don't think it's as good as everybody wants it to be. I think in a ways accomplishments are better. So that, and then number three, I'm going Canelo, and four, I have Usyk and Fury. So the winner of that will be number three. They'll move above Canelo because Canelo's lost to Bivol.
Okay. So kind of focusing on the fight between Inoue and Neri, how do you see that going?
However, Inoue wants, like, I don't think Neri has anything that's going to scare Inoue in a way. I think Inoue just kind of just walks through him, honestly. It'll be one of those showcases, like, dang, how good is Inoue in a way? Like, Stephen Fulton is going to look better than Lewis Neri will look come to Monday.
I'm thinking round six, round seven, body shot finish.
Oh, yeah. But I body shot mid-rounds, I do see Inoue kind of just cruising to a victory. He might put him away early. I mean, depends on how quick he comes out the gate. You know, he's not always the fastest starter. Not all the best boxers are fast starters, or a lot of them aren't. So, you know, I can see him coming out the gate and being like, let's go to war and getting out of there early. But I think the safe bet's like round six, round seven. You know, a lot of body work obviously comes from him. And I mean, Neri hadn't fought near the competition in a way he's fought. And he's just going to be way too sharp for in a way. The left hook's going to find its home. You know, whether Inoue wants it to be up high or down low, he's going to find the left hook in the right hand.
Yeah, and then hopefully he moves up in weight and we can see him go a little bit higher. And let's just see, you know, the legacy of Inoue. Let's see where he ends up.
Can you imagine if he goes undisputed two more times?
That'd be insane.
Oh, my God.
Because looking at, you know, Crawford's obviously looking at, you know, potentially doing it at 154, right?
Yeah, he wants to go up and fight Charlo, but not really at the same time. I don't know. Crawford, he talks a big game, but his actions actually don't back it up to me. You know, he kind of wishy-washy's around what he wants. It's like, you know, the whole talking like, I want Canelo fight. Like, no, you don't. You really don't want Canelo. You're just talking to put your name in the conversation with him. You're not going to go up to 168 and fight Canelo. He's not coming down to 160 to fight you. You know, so that's not going to happen. You know, I could see him going up to 160 and fighting like a Jeannebeck, beating Jeannebeck, really. But yeah, I just don't see him going up to 168. So, yeah, I don't know.
Interesting. Moving on to this week's news and notes, the July 20th bout between YouTube-turned-prize-fighter Jake Paul and former heavyweight champion of the world Mike Tyson will be classified as a sanctioned professional fight by the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulations. The heavyweight showdown will be contested over 8 2-minute rounds, with each fighter using 14-ounce gloves, and the outcome will affect their professional boxing record. Well, where do we start on this?
Yeah. I mean, it's a joke. I honestly cover a lot of Jake Paul because I think what he's doing to boxing is actually a good thing. He's showing them the new way to promote fights because he's better at promoting than everybody not named Eddie Hearn. But this fight, it's kind of gross. I love Mike Tyson. I did a giant – you can go to my website, fight-library.com. I did an article called Mike Tyson Facing a Giant, where I interviewed five people, Ribalta, Lou Savarese, Francois Botha, and somebody else. I'm sorry for forgetting the name. And they talked about fighting Mike Tyson. So Mike Tyson is one of my all-time favorite fighters just because of what he represented and the violence that he brought. But, like, this is just gross, you know. And Jake Paul's going to beat him. Like, he's going to knock out Mike Tyson if they're actually fighting. So, like, don't be surprised, because I went back and watched Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr., which happened, obviously, in 2020. Tyson didn't look that good. He looked old, and because he is old, you know. So, I'm not happy about it. I'm trying to go to the fight just to be like, hey, I watched Mike Tyson fight live, but ooh, it's gross.
The only way that this works, I guess, if that's the right wording, is if Mike Tyson wins.
Yeah, Mike Tyson has to win, but then it's like, oh, well, Jake Paul fought Mike Tyson. What does he expect? You know, it's not like he's fighting Hashim Rahman Jr., you know, who was a heavyweight, who has a glass chin. Like, this is Mike Tyson. Everybody loves Mike Tyson. There's only like two people on the planet that don't love Mike Tyson, and that's his ex-wife and that other Desiree lady who accused him of inappropriate things.
Do you feel that we see much crossover from people like Jake Paul and the YouTubers coming into boxing and fighting?
I hate to keep plugging my stuff, but I just did a video about how this is nothing new. Boxing's been all about exhibitions. Jack Dempsey fought a pro wrestler. Muhammad Ali fought Rocky Marciano in a computer simulation, and he fought a pro bowler. George Foreman fought five people in one night. Roberto Duran did exhibitions. Shaq and Oscar De La Hoya fought. It's nothing new. Boxing loves the freak show, and this is just the YouTubers doing that.
Do you think they stay, though? Do you think they come just to watch Jake Paul and then they go home? Or do you think that, like, obviously a small portion probably will be like, you know what, I like boxing now. You know, I'm going to stay. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to come to fights.
It depends on how good Jake Paul gets, actually, because if he gets good and he fights for a world title, he'll get some fans that are diehard boxing fans now. Like, he'll turn them. But it is – let's be honest, you're right. I think you're spot on. It is Jake Paul's audience. They go where he goes. If Jake Paul decides, oh, I'm not doing this no more, I'm going to play pickleball from now on, professional pickleball, they're losing that Jake Paul money.
What do you think about Netflix? Because this fight is going to be on Netflix. What do you think about Netflix entering the sports realm?
I think they're going to wipe the floor clean with everybody. The UFC is rumored to be moving over to Netflix from ESPN. That's, you know, far from being truthful, but Netflix is going to come in and take over a lot because they're already in a lot of people's homes.
And for people that don't know, I mean, the Netflix already has rights to the WWE, which is under the same banner as the UFC.
Yep. And that's a bad sign. I mean, it's a bad sign for ESPN, but not for fans. Like, if they were to offer like a $40 a month plan to where I didn't have to buy pay-per-views, I'm all in, you know, they got my money.
It's a good dream.
Yeah, I can dream.
So moving on, Errol Spence reportedly in litigation with trainer Derek James over unpaid fees. Derek James is supposedly seeking around $5 million in damages from Errol Spence, who supposedly had a verbal agreement that he would get 10% of the purses. And then obviously Errol Spence is saying, well, it's only 10% of the purse, not 10% of all the pay-per-views as well. So something I think essentially you should probably get in writing, especially, you know, when Errol becomes a big professional star.
Yeah, I don't know why he wouldn't do that. I mean, he's a big time name trainer, and he's got some of the biggest names in the sport. Obviously, why wouldn't he have that on paper? So got to be something there. I'm gonna leave that up to the lawyers because I don't know how the inner workings of that is and how he structures his contracts and stuff with his fighters. And if it was a verbal agreement, you know, Spence might have him fleeced. You know, which kind of sucks for Derek James, but he's got Ryan Garcia now, so he's going to make even more money than Errol Spence gave him.
One thing that seems to be a debate on Twitter is, do you think if you take a fighter from a child to a professional like he did with Errol Spence, essentially, does he deserve 10% of a $25 million fee? Or should it just be, for example, $350,000, which I think is what they paid him, because he's not essentially in there risking his life?
I mean, he made Errol Spence a great boxer. You know, I think it should be a flat fee, period, you know. Then again, I don't train people, and I don't know exactly how that works. But, like, I mean, why would you do that to somebody that made you? You know, like, Derek James made Errol Spence. He made Errol Spence. He stuck through him. Even through, like, the car wreck and stuff, he was there by his side, this and that. I mean, why wouldn't you? Why would you want to fleece somebody like that? So, you know, it might be a bad move from Errol Spence, but it also might be, you know, Derek James didn't give him enough attention like he wanted to lead up to Terrence Crawford. And he's like, all right, well, if that's the case, then what do you deserve? You know, you weren't there, the biggest fight of my life.
Yeah, just something I think everyone has to look at and think, you know, get it all on a contract.
Yeah, absolutely. Get it on paper.
Okay, so before I let you leave, I'm just going to run over some upcoming big fights with you and get your quick reviews. So Sunday the 12th. Of May from Perth, Australia, Lomachenko against George Kambosos.
That's a good fight. Kambosos is he's got a good name now after beating Teofimo Lopez and being spirited against Devin Haney. I'm a huge Lomachenko stan, but he's also rounding the Cape of Good Hope. So, you know, I think Lomachenko gets it done, and he don't need to fight much longer, honestly.
Dream fight, Inoue, Lomachenko, if they could get to a weight division. I'm sure they can't due to age and weight and stuff like that, but if they were a similar size.
130 is not out of the question for Lomachenko. especially if Inoue's coming up. That's like one more big hurrah. Like, let's see Lomachenko turn back the clock and get him a win, or let's see the new coming of the next mega pound-for-pound champion.
Saturday, the 18th of May, from the Kingdom Arena in Riyadh, Alexander Usyk against Tyson Fury.
I love that fight, too. Alexander Usyk, I think Usyk gets it done, actually. Tyson Fury, I don't know what it is. I can't place my finger on it, but like he's a good boxer, but he's just something off, and I can't quite place it.
Saturday, the 1st of June, from the Kingdom Arena, Riyadh again, Artur Beterbiev against Dmitry Bivol for all the titles at light heavyweight.
That's the best fight. That's the best fight we got coming up. Beterbiev's old, but the last thing that goes to your power. Bivol's very disciplined of a fighter. Lots of 1-2 straight punches. Doesn't get in trouble too often. Obviously beat Canelo. I'm not making a pick. I'm going to let you, I'm going to leave that one up there because that's one of the ones that I don't want to pick. And I'm just going to be like, let's see what's up. Let's see how this goes because it's going to be great.
Saturday, the 15th of June, from the MGM Grand Las Vegas, Gervonta Davis against Frank Martin.
Tank going to put on a good show. Frank Martin's good, but I mean, Tank's him right now. He's going to be the guy to go out and put on a fantastic show for the fans, and it's going to be a fun fight.
And the one you touched on earlier, David Benavidez against Alexander Blubednik. I can't pronounce it. The Nail, essentially. And like you touched on, the winner of this fight should fight the winner of Artur Beterbiev and Dmitry Bivol.
That's what Al Hashish said. Benavidez was going to go through Vostick. I think Vostick's like banned from several places for performance enhancing drugs. He fought an MMA fight and knocked somebody out from his back with a hammer fist or something like that, and he got in trouble. So I don't think he'll have any too much controversy surrounding him. I think Benavidez gets it done.
Saturday, the 29th of June, from the Footprint Center, Phoenix, Arizona, Juan Francisco Estrada up against Jesse Bam Rodriguez for the WBC super flyweight title.
I'm going to shock you and say Estrada wins that fight.
Oh, wow. You're going to go Estrada?
I'm going Estrada on that fight. I like Bam, and I think he's the better fighter, but I think this is one of those fights that's a trap fight.
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that.
I had to come up with a little zinger for you.
And then Saturday, the 20th of July, AT&T Stadium, Arlington. This is the card that has Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, but we're going to focus on Katie Taylor against Amanda Serrano for the undisputed super lightweight titles.
I want to see a trilogy, so that means Serrano has to win. So let's go with that one. Let's go with that one because that was a fun fight the first time around.
If Katie wins, do you think she walks away?
Yeah, I think that's it for her. Like, she got nothing else to do. She might go fight Chris Cyborg, you know, but meh, that's it.
Well, Blaine, I appreciate your time today. If you want to just tell everybody where they can find your stuff, all your social media, websites and everything.
I'm on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it these days, at Blaine Henry TFL. My website's fight-library.com. You can get all that to your inbox by my Substack, which is just Fight Library on Substack. And then YouTube, Blaine Henry's The Fight Library, weekly breakdowns on fights and history episodes on samurai, boxing exhibitions, and old school wrestlers. If you like combat sports, that's the spot for you.
And we are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. And catch us next week. We'll be reviewing the big Canelo fight. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.